Hey, Sean Gaby here. Welcome to the Supernatural Leadership Podcast.
Hey everyone, Sean Gaby here with the Supernatural Leadership Podcast, talking about the difference between principle-led leadership and presence-led leadership. We all have a leader within. Why not make that leader a little more supernatural? Enjoy today's episode. Hey everyone, welcome again to another Supernatural Leadership Podcast episode. So thankful that you're here. My name is Sean Gaby. So great to have you. Don't forget to rate, review, share this podcast, and let us know. Let us know how these episodes are changing your leadership. Sometimes I get these amazing encouragements on social media of how people have been listening to this podcast for some time, and it's just totally transformed the way that they lead. That's our heart. That's our goal. You know, we believe that you have a leader within. And so our hope is to help that leader become a little more supernatural. And so excited for today's episode. Today, we have a special guest, a new guest with us, and even a new relationship for me. Someone that I've met not too long ago, and a mutual friend of ours connected us, and actually just met in person in New York City just probably about a month ago, probably this week, actually. And so I'm excited to have him on. His name is Dr. Malik Edwards, and I'm going to read a little bit of his bio just to paint a picture of who he is and what he's about. And so Dr. Malik Edwards is a passionate lover of God and people. Dr. Malik was ordained as an apostle by Bishop Bill Hammond, who's, we know, is a legend, especially in the charismatic world. I just interviewed his daughter-in-law, Jane Hammond, recently, and I know that podcast has just impacted so many people's lives, and so a little bit of a familiarity there. And he's been ordained as a minister by Bishop Bill Hammond, by Christian International Ministries. Apostle Malik holds a doctorate in Christian ministry from Real Knowledge Bible School in California in 1999. Malik turned his life over to God after a dramatic encounter with God in prison. We're going to dive into that a little bit. He then began to travel to various churches, giving his testimony. After receiving a call to ministry, Malik went into Calvary Campground in Ashland, Virginia for ministry training. The specific focus of his training was world missions and leadership development. Apostle Malik, at the age of 43, has been to over 100 or on 100 missions trips and has traveled to 30 different nations, such as Israel, Egypt, Mexico, Honduras, and Trinidad and Tobago, preaching, leading worship, training, and giving spiritual counsel to leaders. Malik is known worldwide as an apostle slash prophet, a worshiper, passionate preacher, visionary, and someone who carries the glory of God. In summer of 2007, he met his love of his life, Ashley. By the spring of 2008, they were married together, and they have four beautiful children, two daughters and two sons. Dr. Malik founded Relentless Global and oversees several churches, ministries, and ministers. And he currently resides in Northern Virginia outside of D.C. So, Dr. Malik Edwards, welcome to the Supernatural Leadership Podcast. What's going on?
Man, I love it. I love it. I love that we're doing this.
So excited to have you, man. I know that we recently just met, and, you know, a mutual friend of ours connected us, and actually a mutual pastor friend of ours in Ohio messaged us, Pastor Juan Rivera in Ohio. I can't remember what part of Ohio he's from, but
I want to say Columbia, but I think that's wrong.
Yeah, I think that's wrong too. It sounds
Huntsville.
Like
I don't know.
No, I don't remember what it's called, the city, but we were in Israel together, and we both, you know obviously Bishop Robert Stearns. We're on a trip together, and he's like, you got to connect with this guy, Malik Edwards. And then we met just recently at a philanthropy fundraiser event in New York City.
Crazy.
And man, just so enjoyed hanging out with you, man, walking the streets of New York City and chatting and realizing that we have some mutual, you know, friends beyond, you know, Pastor Juan. And I just love how God, you know, he connects people even before they're connected. He connects them by virtue of other relationships before we even actually get physically connected. And so it's been so good to get to know you a little bit and have you here. And I'd love for you to, you know, you have a wild story, man. Like, I'd love for people to hear a little bit of your story of your supernatural leadership journey. Give us a little bit of a taste test, man, of what, like where you came from, your journey into leadership and as it pertains to the supernatural.
Yeah, that's a great question. And again, thanks for having me on. Well, you know, my story starts off where I was born addicted to drugs. My mom used drugs all throughout the pregnancy. It was back in the 80s. I was born in 1980. So it was heroin use. So that was taking a lot of people out. And so I was born, you know, with high amounts of heroin in my system. I had to go through several operations. And when I preach and travel all over the world, I say, you know, God loves you and has a plan for your life. And if you're here, that means God has a plan for you. And so that's kind of like where I came out of. And then I was given up for adoption. And I was brought into like a Christian home slash, you know, there was some other stuff going on. Nobody went to church, but I went to a private school. And so those seeds were planted inside of my heart. But when I turned about 16, 17 years old, I just started, you know, generational curses started going back into the same things that, you know, my family was into, like drugs, alcohol, you know, all those kind of things, and ended up actually going to prison when I was 19 years old. Right before I went to prison, I actually met my biological mother, found out I had brothers. I have a whole Oprah Winfrey story, but wow. The long story short is when I was in prison, God met me in a prison cell. You know, I got on my knees and I just said, Lord, forgive me for you know, I knew that I wasn't going in the right direction. I had had several encounters leading up to that point, and I just knew I was going in the wrong way. And I asked Jesus to forgive me. And in that moment, Jesus walked into my prison cell visibly like fire and light. So I saw the similitude, you know, we would say like an outline of a man. And then I saw in that similitude was fire and light. I knew it to be Jesus. And immediately I just repented some more, and I felt the love of God. And I also felt this boldness to ask. You know, the Bible says if you come before his throne of grace in a time of need. And so I said, you know, Lord, many people say they don't know you. They can't see you. They can't hear you. But for the rest of my life, I want to see you and I want to hear your voice. And that prayer has been my trademark for all my life. I'm 43 years now, and we have seen God and we have heard his voice and we have done what he said to do. So that led me kind of to a place where, you know, man, my story is so intricate, so I'm trying to get the one couple pieces.
I love it, man. Yeah.
But I think, you know, it's interesting when you talk about leadership, because here there's a scripture in Ecclesiastics. It's one of my favorite scriptures. It says, a young man shall come from prison and become king. And I feel like that is my testimony.
What verse is that?
Ecclesiastes 4:14.
Awesome.
And it says, for the youth has come from the prison to the kingship.
Wow.
So
man, that's
a
like
different
your story.
That's my story. And so when I think about that, you know, even where I'm at now, God has supernaturally placed me in certain positions, even being with you at the philanthropy event. I mean, just like thinking, man, why am I here? Like, how did I get here? And it's really truly been the favor of God. But if I would think about the one moment that I realized, man, I'm a leader, was actually in prison. So I gave my life to the Lord in prison, like I said. And I remember,
ask you, what was your sentence like? Because just to give people context, so you're
prison
at 19. Is this like you've been given a 10-year sentence? Like what's the
I was given a 3-year sentence. It's called a 3-year sentence with something flat. It's like some other number on the bottom of that, depending if it's your first or you can go up for you know, probation at a certain point. But I was in prison for actually 9 months because it was my first offense, and I was able to get out on what they call an intensive supervision program, where they basically monitor you for, you know, 2 years. So it was intense, but it was needed. And so when I was, so it's kind of like this. It's like you have, you have prison, you have county jail, you have correction facility, and then you have like a prison. So it's like a 3-tier or 3-level system. So you go, most people go into prison and then a county jail, and then they'll get out maybe if they have like a misdemeanor or something like that. But because I sold drugs to an undercover cop, I ended up having to go to, you know, big boy jail basically. But you start off, everyone starts off kind of in county prison. So I'm in county prison and the Lord speaks to me. So this is right after I have this encounter with God. He speaks to me and tells me there's somebody's life in here that you're going to change their life, and then you're going to leave.
Wow.
So he's like, this is a sign that you're going to get out of this particular, you know, because everyone's, you know, at certain times leaving to go to correction facility where they you know, have all the administration, and then they send you to, you know, the prison. And so I'm like, okay, you know, I hear the Lord. I don't really know what this means. I'm on top of the, I'm top of the prison where they have their, you know, playing basketball, and I, you know, I'm not playing basketball. I'm just kind of like looking up at the stars, like in a daze, like, why am I here? How did I get here? I got to get out of here. I bump into this guy behind me. Now, mind you, I'm reading the book of Joshua at the moment. I bump into this guy. We turn around, and basically, like, almost like I'm going to fight this guy, because, you know, in prison, it could be very, you know, you don't know who you're going to bump into, who you're going to run into. And basically, this guy's like, you know, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm like, okay. I say, hey, man, what's your name? He's like, my name is Joshua. And in that moment, I knew that that God had a divine assignment for me.
Now, question for you in this context. Yeah. This is very just, so you have this encounter with Jesus. You see, you kind of describe it as like an outline you're having. I'm assuming it's an open, sort of an open vision.
For sure.
It's a real to you. And then you go from like having this encounter, God says to you, you're going to help somebody, and then you're going to leave. Did you have any context or grid or paradigm for, you know, what that means? Like you know, giving somebody like a word, giving somebody a prophetic word, like
nothing. So I had no grid for any of this. I had no grid for God speaking to someone. I had no grid for, you know, maybe I could tell that another time, but I had no grid for the supernatural, except for maybe the encounters that I had growing up, knowing that they were different. But even if I would share them to my mother or someone, they wouldn't understand what I was talking about. Right. So I run into this guy. God basically, he's not telling me like this is the one that I'm going to change, but I felt I needed to do something. So over the next 4 weeks, you know, we would call it now discipleship. I basically discipled this guy, and I just saved like a month's, maybe like 3 weeks saved. And now I'm like, hey, we need to read the Bible. So we're reading the Bible every day. And this one moment, I never forget it. We were coming back in from working out. We had to take showers, and they called on the intercom and said, T.D. Jakes. Now, he wasn't there. It was on a video, but it said that T.D. Jakes is going to be ministering to all the you know, everyone in the prison, and to come, you know, to a nighttime service. And so I said, hey, man, we really need to go. And he was like, man, we stink. I said, man, we're in prison. Everybody stinks. Let's go. And so I lead him to this meeting, and he gives his life to the Lord that night. Wow. And he looks at me. He says, thank you so much. My life is never going to be the same. And that night, you get locked down maybe around 11, 12 o'clock. And all over the intercom again, they said, Malik Edwards, pack your bags. You're leaving to go to the next place. So the word of the Lord,
the
what God
place,
spoke to
meaning
me.
Meaning like the next jail?
The next jail. Yeah, the next jail.
Okay, got it.
So I went but everything the Lord told me, you're going to change somebody's life, and then you're going to leave this place is exactly what happened in the very moment. And so I realized early on that God was, I mean, I look back, I would say, and say, man, God has been using me in the realm of leadership, leading people to Christ, leading people into their next step, leading people into their purpose and their destiny from the beginning of my salvation, only 3 weeks in. And it was powerful moment.
I love that, man. I just to stay on that for a second, because I think like, you know, so many people wait until all their life seems to be in order before they believe that God can use them. I hear so many people always tell me, well, like, I got to get this cleaned up, this figured out. I mean, here you are in jail, and, you know, it's like Joseph. You know, Joseph's in jail, and he ends up managing the jail. He ends up interpreting dreams in jail. He ends up doing what you did, changing someone's life. I mean, the dream that he interpreted, the two dreams that he interpreted in jail, not only did it end up coming back to him and promoting him, pulling him out of the prison, because then the Pharaoh wanted to get this Joseph guy to interpret his dreams, but it also changed the life of the guy that actually ended up living. Because I'm sure we don't know much about the guy, but I'm sure like he was like, man, like this, the God that Joseph serves, like it was accurate. Like what Joseph said was accurate for both the guy who died and the guy who lived.
Exactly.
And you have that experience, you know, and I think that's a good life lesson, that whether you're on the mountaintop or whether you're in the valley, It doesn't matter good or bad, crisis or not. God is present with us. And I think one of the greatest keys to good leadership and great leadership is allowing God to use you, whether you're in your mess or you're in your living in your victory. Yeah. And I just honor that, man. I think it's so cool that you as a young believer, I can look back on my own life in similar situations and say, like, man, like, the only reason why I am where I am today is because I just chose to continually lean in.
Yeah.
In every season to allow God's assignment to be more important than my dysfunction.
Yeah, that's
and,
it.
And my environment. So you did that. And so I'm like, you bring us along the journey. So now you leave, you kind of get promoted to the next jail, or maybe it's not considered a promotion.
It's definitely not a promotion, but I go to the next, and basically, it's just as crazy. It's even crazier because now people are there for 5 years, 10 years. And so I'm with the big boys, and, again, God is encountering me. A quick little story. I went to a Bible study. Now, again, Holy Spirit, supernatural, still not being, I'm experiencing it, but it's not really being said to me. No one is talking about these things. I'm just reading my Bible, and I'm really reading Psalms, maybe a little bit of John. I'm not really, I read through the Old Testament, but I'm still not connecting that, man, my God is a supernatural God. And so I go to this Bible study. I come back from the Bible study. I'm on my bed. I have a dream. In my dream, this bright light is coming from the sky, and it's shining down. And all these people, and I realize it's the end time. Like, something is, we're at the end of the days. And as this light is coming down, people are being caught up into this light. And they're basically being raptured up or caught up, or, I didn't have language for them. I would just say they're being caught up into this light. As they're being caught up into the light, I'm now being sucked into this light. And as I'm being sucked into this light, I wake up. So I go up into this light. I wake up on that thing. I'm in prison, not in church, not on a prayer line. I'm in prison on top of a bunk. I wake up violently and I start to pray in the spirit. And I'm just praying in the spirit. And I literally had to cover my mouth because
and you have no grid for like tongues and what that is.
No grid for it.
You didn't
all.
Even read it. You didn't even read it in 1 Corinthians 14 or 12.
No grid. Wow. Had no idea what I was doing. I thought I was, oh my gosh, I've totally lost it. I'm in here. It's probably like my seventh month in prison, and I've totally lost it. But I knew something was happening. But I literally, I don't know how to explain it. But maybe it's the way of like suppress. I suppressed something and was like, I can never do that again. But a year later, when I was out of prison, I was 2 years later, matter of fact, I was out of prison, and I went to an event with a Christian friend of mine who was a rapper, and I had a whole encounter with the Lord, and that's when I started to speak in tongues, and I started to prophesy like I've been prophesying for years.
Wow. Okay. So go back to this. So now you're at top bunk. You have this encounter.
Yeah.
So now what? How long are you in this prison for?
So I'm in this prison for about 3 months.
Okay.
And then I got out, and I was on intensive supervision program. And at that time, I was actually, and shout out to probation officers and people who are leading in the space of, because, something cool about my testimony is I'm able to really talk to a lot of different type of people. And when I got out of prison, I was actually I met my biological mom. So they live 15 minutes away from my adoptive parents. My adoptive mom kicked me out. I went to prison. Before I went to prison, I met my biological family. So after I came back from prison, I lived with my biological family.
Wow.
And so when living with them, super dysfunctional, drug dealing, all that kind of stuff. But my mom, she was a cancer patient, a survivor of cancer and HIV. Remember, she did heroin. So she was really, jacked up. But she knew that something was different about me, and she couldn't treat me like she did my other brothers who I met and sisters. And so she basically called my probation officer, because I started kind of like going back, even after having this encounter, even after all this thing, living in that environment. And my probation officer perceived that I would not make it if I stayed in this environment. And he actually put me back in prison for about a month till a halfway house, which is like a transitional home, can would open up so that I can be in a more
stable
what do you call it? What do you say?
It's like a stable environment.
Like a stable environment, a controlled environment.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can get a job, I can get a bank account. And so, you know, it was just, even then, I would say, just thinking about leadership, how supernatural it was that God would, and I believe that this probation officer, to my knowledge, was a believer, that he discerned that there was something different about me, but made the hard choice of sending me back to prison so that I can actually have a better outcome. So whenever I get a chance to speak to probation officers, police officers, we have a minister that we connect with, John Powder, in Las Vegas. Whenever I speak to inmates, you know, usually it's inmates, probation officers, and police officers, I always say, like, listen, you know, if it wasn't for him, if it wasn't for that probation officer, I don't know if I would have the same life that I'm having right now. I don't know if I would be able to operate. I don't know if I would be where I'm at right now.
Wow. Wow. Do you see those fireworks that just went off?
I know. I know. That was just like supernatural.
What was that? That's hilarious. That's amazing. It's almost like, you know, prison was good then at the end. Like to go back into prison, that was the better choice for that month.
Yeah, when I first went before the judge, the first time I went before the judge and he was sentencing me, the same judge that locked my mother up, my biological mother, was the same judge who locked me up for the first time. And think about it, I never knew her, and she told me when I went, she said, just tell him that you just met your family and everything in your life has changed. And that was not the truth. I did meet my family, but everything wasn't changed. I was smoking more, I was drinking more, I was hanging out more. And I remember going before the judge and he said, son, do you have something to say? And I hear my mom's voice in my head, you know, just say something and he's going to let you go. But I felt, this is one of the first encounters I had with the Lord, the hand of the Lord, like a physical hand came over my mouth. And I just stood in front of the judge and I cried and I heard the audible voice of God. And he said, I'm rescuing you. And and so I realized that I was a rescue mission. Amen. Like most of us who are listening, we were rescue missions for God, you know?
Wow. That's crazy. Okay. So you go back into for a month, you come out of jail after a month. Now what? Now, where are you? What's where are you at?
So now I'm in a halfway house. I'm basically, you know, rehabilitation. I'm living with a group of guys. And, you know, I think about when you said Joseph, you know, when God's hand is on you, favor is on you. I'm here with a bunch of, you know, these guys are a lot older than me. Some of them aren't. Some of them are, you know, maybe around my age. But, you know, definitely they didn't have the encounter that I've had. And in the halfway house, I'm getting lots of favor. And matter of fact, when I graduated the halfway house, the president of the halfway house, who no one really ever sees, he goes up to his office, comes down because other people run the halfway house. So he has little to no interaction with any of the people that are there. They said this is the first time this has ever happened. He came down with a plaque. And when I graduated halfway house, he gave me a plaque and he says, Malik, you have made a change in my life and in the life of this organization. And God is going to, and he used the word, God's going to use you tremendously. And it wasn't even a Christian halfway house. It was just another confirmation or affirming thing to me that, man, God's hand was on my life. And so, yeah.
Well, that's amazing, man. I love those kind of stories. I love those like origin stories of how we, you know, people first meet God in a supernatural way. And I think like, man, I think about the follow-up. I think about the next steps. You know, so many people get lost in the next steps. They have this encounter. They encounter the living God in a real way. Their life is transformed, mm-hmm. but now they don't know how to like, how do I apply it to my everyday life? How do I live it out? How do I... You know, when you're back into society now, out of prison, like, how do you integrate? I see a lot of guys that come out of prison that I've even worked with in the past. And it's like they don't stay long enough in the right environments and
That's
they get
it.
Pulled back in. They maybe don't have mentors. They don't have people discipling them.
Hey, pause, a little commercial break. If you haven't already, I want to encourage you. And you're wanting to take your supernatural leadership to the next level, visit supernaturalleadership.com and join one of our on-demand courses. It is going to change the game. So many amazing testimonies already have come out of people over the years taking this course content. I want to encourage you, sign up today. We have a special offer for you. And as well, if you want to go even deeper, and take your leadership to the next level, I would encourage you, and maybe you've already thought about this before, but getting a coach, a one-on-one mentor. Well, I have an opportunity that I want to invite you into with myself, one-on-one mentoring and coaching. It may be a short time or even a longer time. We have many different coaching packages that we offer, and I want to encourage you to consider this today. I believe it will take your leadership to the next level. Dream interpretation, growing in your discipleship, growing in the word, maybe even preparation for you for vocational ministry and bringing the supernatural into every sphere of society. I want to encourage you today, click the link in the description, fill out the survey, and we'll see if coaching is a good fit for you.
What was that journey like for you? And what do you think about the value of the, I think one of the most important words prophetically in this season for the body of Christ is the return to real discipleship. Like,
oh yeah.
And it never stops. And I think we were in a season of the body of Christ where it seemed like, you know, it seemed generally speaking that it was more about numbers. It was more about crowds. It was more about gatherings and having a, you know, a big event, and all those things are really good. But what's even more important for the purpose of reformation and transformation is real kingdom discipleship. And so
yeah,
what was that like for you coming out of prison? Now you're in the world.
Yeah.
Like, what happened? How did you get to where you are now?
You know, this is so beautiful, because I want to just confirm what you said. I can almost cry right now, because when I just got back from South Africa and I told my wife, I said, the key to seeing revival, to seeing God move in the marketplace and all these things, is through true, genuine discipleship. If we're not making disciples, what are we doing? And so to go back to those moments, you know, because I wouldn't say it was a systematic, like, God, part of a church and they immediately discipled me. Matter of fact, the church that I went to, they weren't really discipling me. But what God did is, you know, and I think I'll use this one word, teachable. As a leader, you're always looking for those who are teachable, right? Yeah. And I think that somehow along my journey that I remain teachable. I find that a lot of people, when I was in prison with them, they weren't teachable. They didn't learn the lesson. I tell you, the first night I was there, I said, that's it, I'm done. This has taught me that I'm going the wrong way. So I think that ability to be teachable started the journey for me. And then I remember I was living in I got out the halfway house and I was living in a one bedroom apartment, and someone from the halfway house, connection from that halfway house, who was like a mentor, like a sponsor to some of the guys that were in there, he said, hey, you need to come to this Bible study to meet these young guys. And he knew in his head, he didn't tell me, but these young guys, he knew that I would connect with them. And so at the time I did Christian rap and they were Christian rappers. And so I went to this Bible study and we became great friends, and they were just a little bit older than me. But even to this day, I tell them that they discipled me. They took me underneath their wing. We had nights of prayer. We were vulnerable. We kept each other accountable in the area of, you know, like, all the things that young men go through. And it was and even when I did fall, or one of them had fall or anything like that, we would keep ourselves accountable. We would tell on ourselves. We would pray with each other, cry with each other. And that was also very transformative in the sense of knowing that, oh, here's a newsflash, we can't do it alone. And that was a key for me, that I realized, man, you can't do this walk alone. And in leadership, you can't do it alone either.
Well, I think two things I think are so important in the realm of discipleship is finding a tribe that you can grow with, and finding leaders that can help you grow.
Exactly.
There's two really important elements. I think Jesus modeled it like so well in Luke chapter 2, you know, where when he was missing, and he was 12 years old, and his parents were looking all around for him, and they find him 3 days later in the temple sitting. It says sitting, listening, and asking questions.
Yeah.
That to me is the posture of teachability.
Yeah.
To sit with the right people, to listen, and then to ask questions. That's how the rabbinical teachers of the day, even Jesus, how he modeled discipleship too, is a lot of it was question-based.
Yeah.
And
not the speed of your success is the speed of your questions. You got to ask questions.
Exactly. And not even to give you the answers, just to even the questions. Sometimes Jesus would respond. His answer was a question to the question to help people to come to their own conclusions as the answer. That's what a good counselor does, right? So brings us to a place where we can discover ourselves, not just being told what the answer is, but actually finding the answer ourselves. And so you had this tribe of people. Now, did you have like a leader come in? Because I think like for me, that was my journey. Like when I got saved, when I was about to turn 19, I got radically saved in my car on the 46 on a major highway in my city in Ottawa here, and everything changed. And right away, within the first few months, I had this couple approach me. I didn't even know what mentoring was. I didn't know the need
for it. Right.
We would love to pour into you guys. And so every Sunday after church, and I was going at the time, very conservative church, this couple would pour into my life. And man, that set a precedent for my need to stay teachable. Because you said it, like teachability, like what do you, two things I want to ask you. Number one, did you have a leader that came your way that began to pour into you, mentor you? And what do you think the biggest reason is why people aren't teachable?
No, that's a great question. To answer the first one, I had an interesting journey as far as leadership is concerned, because I would have been amazing if God sent a leader right away. But what it seemed to happen is, part of my story, my testimony is that after maybe 2 years with these friends and going to these, you know, being a part of a Baptist church, not really, it was really a lot of me putting in the effort to be where I need to be at, and not really someone telling me or guiding me, but just maybe having these core friends that were kind of doing that. After about these 2 years of that, then, you know, I had another encounter with God, and that's where I ended up at a ministry called Calvary Pentecostal Tabernacle, which basically, for a long story short, is a ministry that is like a parachurch ministry. It's on a campground, a few acres. People come there from all over the world. They have 10 and a half weeks of services, two services a day for 10 and a half weeks. They have services in the wintertime, and then they have these, you know, men's conferences, women conferences, et cetera. And for the rest of the time, the people who live on the campground are volunteers, and they go and travel in and out of the nations. And so what God did is he brought me to this campground, another controlled environment, which is interesting because, you know, Galatians talks about the tutor and the schoolmaster. It was like God brought me to this place where there was a lot of community, and the staff, the volunteer staff would live on the campground in Richmond, Virginia, well, close to Richmond, Virginia. And, you know, we were obviously being led by the pastor. Her name was Pastor Jane Louder. And so she was the pastor, and obviously she poured into me. But I always tell people it was like a community of believers. A lot of them were older than me, old Pentecost, you know, no makeup, long skirts, that type of environment. And but it was in that community that I really learned about iron sharpening iron. And but it was through her leadership, I would say. And I want to answer your second question, but it just sparked in my mind when I thought about it. I was hearing God's voice, so teachability. You know, I was hearing God's voice, and I was prophesying in services, and this was the environment where I could really, really do that. And so as I was in this place of ministry, you know, now it's 2 years, about 2.5 years in, and I'm hearing from the Lord. You know, I'm hearing God. And so I think I'm ready to lead a group, and I have a burden for Jamaica. So I go to her one day and I tell her, I say, hey, I really feel like I'm supposed to lead a group of the volunteers here to Jamaica. I've seen other people lead, and you know, I've kind of went up in the ranks a little bit. And she just looked at me and said, okay, well, I don't really know what that's gonna look like, but you know, and I kind of left that meeting super disappointed. You know, actually, I went out into the service and someone gave me a prophetic word. I didn't even care. I don't even know what they said. I just didn't care. I felt like I was shot down. 2 weeks later, she calls me to, you know, to her table. We're in community. We're all eating lunch. And she calls me to the table with this other guy who's been at the camp for maybe a lot longer than I. He's more like a veteran, what we call. It's same, similar age. And she says, hey, Malik, I really felt like the Lord was saying that we need to go to Jamaica, and we need to have Joshua lead this group. You're talking about broken. You're talking about what in the world? I'm the one who had the vision. I'm the one who had the burden. But I learned a valuable lesson in that if you want to be a leader, that you're going to have to learn how to be a great follower. You're going to have to be someone who is great at listening and obeying. And that seed, I believe that seed that I sowed in that obedience, because I could have easily been like, I'm not, you know, but and no shade on that person, but that person's not even in ministry now. So think about it. The person who actually led the team that I thought I was supposed to lead is now no longer in ministry now. But here I am, you know, 20 years later in ministry, thriving. And I think it's just a testament to what the, I think the question was, you know, what helps someone be more teachable? Was that the?
Yeah, kind of like what do you think the number one reason is why people aren't teachable? Like what stops
them? I think that because they're not willing to go through suffering. Jesus was, he said, because he learned obedience through the things that he suffered. So I think if you can't go through, like I preached this a message recently about your faith is on trial. If you're not willing to go through those testings that produces patience, if you always want to be at the lead, if you always want to be at the helm, if you always want to be the one at the steering wheel, man, it will stop you from really reaching the goals that God has for you.
Yeah, I believe that. I mean, tests, you know, James 4, I think it's verse 2, you know, right after verse 1, it talks about, you know, count it all joy when you face trials of many kinds. But it talks about in the next verse about how when your faith is tested, it develops your endurance.
That's right.
We
Upomone.
We lose our leadership when we lose endurance. We lose our everything that we've built when we don't allow the test to produce the endurance that actually makes us a great leader, you know?
Yeah.
And I just believe this with all my heart. Like, and that's obviously what you did. You know, you went through stuff. I mean, I don't know about you. I mean, for me, when I first gave my life to Jesus and I ended up moving from, you know, very liberal, you know, liberal, not politically liberal, but like a liberal in the sense of like, I didn't grow up in an American, Canada is a very unchurched type culture when you juxtapose it against America, right? So, you know, when I moved to the U.S. and I was working out of a mega church in the U.S., you know, I had big, long dreadlocks when I first got saved. I mean,
wow, I can't even imagine that.
Yeah, I look like I just got out of prison. And
send me a picture.
Yeah. And I was an itinerant traveling with dreadlocks. I mean, that was like my world. I came from that kind of scene. And so you know, I remember going to the U.S. and moving to the U.S. and being mentored by this amazing couple. And I was in a mega church of like 5,000 people. And I have to, you know, take my piercings out on Sunday. I got to put my dreads up in a ponytail and
like Ty White.
and I have to wear a suit on Sunday. And I think like things have changed. This was like, you know, in the early 2000s, like things have changed since then, I think, as far as I think culture is concerned and probably even in a lot of mega churches. But it was a culture shock for me. So I'm assuming for you, you come out of prison, you know, you dive in, you grow up, you said you were addicted to drugs in a sense. I mean, your mom was a heroin addict. Like you come in at a prison, you get saved, you're launched into this sort of new phase of life. Now you're at this camp. Like you said, these people didn't even wear makeup. Like, I'm sure there were things that you questioned, you wondered about, like, this is a culture shock. And for those that don't know, like the camp that you were a part of, was founded by the Heflins, which the daughter Ruth Heflin,
correct,
very, very well known. She was like the Glory Realm girl.
Yeah,
for those
for
that
sure.
don't know who that is, Signs and Wonders, but from a very different like era of time. And so, how did you adapt to that culture? Because I think this is what I've always said: whether the anointing or the glory of God comes in tattoos or in a white suit,
right?
I want it. I don't care the package it comes in. And I think that's the key. One of the keys of being teachable is to not let the package something comes in rob you from receiving what God wants to give you. That's what happened to the religious, right? They were waiting for a package that the Messiah would come in. Messiah came in a package that they didn't like, riding on a donkey, humble, lowly, looking like everybody else.
Exactly.
And they rejected and could not receive him. How did you had to have postured yourself this way to be able to grow?
Yeah, I think my wife had a harder time when she came to the to campground. Honestly, I was let me say it like this: I was previously 3 years before the campground sleeping in a prison bed. So for me, I had a lot. There was a lot of gratitude. Honestly, like I think it's just the way I'm wired. And I think that over the years I've had to, you know, check myself, you know, it says check yourself before you wreck yourself. But I think in that season, I was just grateful, bro. I was like, thank you, Jesus, that I'm able to be in a place like this and getting trained by, you know, I didn't know the Benny Hinn's. I didn't know all the names. You know, I didn't know all the Christian. This was my Christian experience. So I was like, wow. I didn't know. I mean, I had a little bit with the Baptist church, but I knew I was different because I'm over here having dreams, having visions, having all these encounters. So when I came to the campground and, you know, they're talking about glory, they're talking about encounters, God speaking, I'm like, this is what I was born for. So I actually came into that. It was a lot easier. I actually have a little bit more shock when I go into some churches now and I see the lack of presence or the lack of reverence for God. It's actually that way where I have to, but it, what it did for me, and again, and this is a beauty, the beauty of my life, is that I'm able to go to really anywhere. I remember they told me when I went to Korea, they said, South Korea, they said, you know, you got to be serious because, you know, the Koreans are serious people. When you minister there, it's going to be tough. But I realized God has prepared me all over these years. And so I go to Korea and the leader of this movement that's there, the first day she's on the floor. I'm like, why is this woman on the floor? Like drunk in the spirit. And then every day she's on the floor. So finally I look at my interpreter and I said, man, like your pastor here, man, she's like, she never does that. She's never been in a situation like that. And I just realized, you know, like God will put you in situations. And if you just be true to who you are and you be authentic to who you are, he'll just show up. So I never really had a problem with a campground in itself. Now, you know, I probably, that's not what we do. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I wear baseball caps. Sometimes I wear a suit. Sometimes I wear whatever. But I just think that a key for me, and I think a key for those who are listening, is that as leaders, sometimes you have to really enjoy the journey and realize how far God has brought you. Sometimes we're so stressed out, right? Like I got four kids, you know, I do. I got four kids. I got two dogs. I got a mortgage. I got this and that. And then I just quickly think, oh my gosh, I used to sleep in a one bedroom apartment with crackheads, you know, trying to stay saved, you know, and now I'm living in a suburb and God is blessing me with a family. So I think perspective, that's a great word to say. Wow. Like your perspective will always help you when you're going through, corridors of life that don't quite reflect your ideology or your thoughts, you know. We're sitting with the philanthropists, we're sitting with all these, you know, their paradigm is maybe not my paradigm, but I'm able to conversate with them because I grew up in Teaneck, New Jersey, which is predominantly a Jewish neighborhood. So I'm able to pull on the threads that make sense and then God does the rest.
I love it. You said something earlier about gratitude. I really feel like for those listening, I think that is an amazing truth, an amazing revelatory truth, I think, for so many people, that if you're going to allow yourself to grow, mature, and be discipled,
so good
to have an attitude that's full of gratitude in whatever sphere, environment, or people group that God has put in your life. If it doesn't jive maybe with your style, maybe it's different, maybe it's opposite to what you're used to, but to see through
I'm glad
all of that,
I'm here.
Yeah, to see through all that and realize that where you've come from and allow yourself to be shaped by the inconvenient, maybe opposing to your personality or style types of environments, that is the key. I think that's a great key because I think I look back to my own life, man, and I see that's how I got through challenging seasons of my own life, is to come back to a place of gratitude to say, hey, God has put these people in my life. And although I may disagree, although I may have a hard time with certain things, because as a Canadian man, I remember going to like Southern, like deep South churches. And, you know, I'd be ministering at a camp or something. And like, they would segregate the male and the female. The males, like people wore like clothes in the swimming pool. It was like, the grid, like I came from a very different grid here in Canada, you know, in the Southern church culture. It was a shock to me, you know, it was a real shock to me. I'm like, man, why are there guys wearing like full shirts and jogging pants in the pool? Like, it just seemed so weird to me, you know? But just to realize that, hey man, like I can celebrate where everyone's at, learn from every environment.
That's right.
Grow from every environment and honor God and see God in every environment. I think that's one of the greatest keys to discipleship. I remember somebody had told me one time, maybe you can should consider cutting your hair. I had big long dreadlocks, and you know, because you're maybe robbing people of being able to receive from you because of your look. Because there's a truth, you know.
Yeah.
Samuel struggled with it. God rebuked Samuel, one of the greatest prophets that ever Israel had ever had. Samuel judged the outside and assumed the firstborn of David or of Jesse was the king, the next king of Israel. And God said, Samuel, like, you're wrong. Like, you've judged the outside, but God looks at the heart. But it's a truth that man will always judge the outside.
Exactly.
And so man is not capable, typically, of seeing through the outside into the heart. It takes a real spiritually discerned person to do that. And most people just aren't in that space. And so I had to really consider, like, am I willing? And I think these are two things that stand out to me in what you've been talking about here today. And I think where the theme really feels to me like this importance of discipleship, you coming from the background you came from, coming through the prison system into where you are now, traveling the world, like, you had to be, one, so thankful that you're not where you were in a bunk in prison to be able to be teachable enough to be discipled. And two, you had to be willing to do whatever it took to adjust, adapt to the new environment so you could grow. I had to come to a place where I was willing to cut my hair. I didn't do it until later on, but once I came to a place of willingness, it was like the lid of my growth opened and I felt like the limitation was broken. It was like Abraham and Isaac. It was like once Abraham came to a place of willingness to sacrifice Isaac, even though he didn't have to, he came to a place of willingness. It was like he was counted as righteous. It was willingness to be obedient and sacrifice what's important to you, which tells me you're teachable. To me, teachability is the fruit of your willing obedience.
So good.
And I think you seem to have carried that through. Would you say that in your process and in your journey, if you were to speak to the next generation of leaders right now and you were to say, hey, gratitude, willingness, what would you say about willingness and how it pertains to your ability and your growth as a leader?
Yeah, I think that your will has to be submitted to something greater for it to really take on that God nature, to really take on that, to really allow God to breathe on it. So when it came to willingness, it really was the idea of, I really want to do your will, God. I don't want my kingdom to come. I want your will to be done. And there cannot be two wills, right? Yeah. There can only be one will that's going to take preeminence. And so I think early on I realized, and again, I think some of the structure, some of the idea of me being in prison, controlled environment, probation, controlled environment, campground, controlled environment. God kept bringing me to these places and was trusting me to submit to the process that he had for me. So I think your willingness, many times, like, because of when you were talking, I was like, man, I'm a product of grace. This is only the grace of God that I am what I am, that I'm doing what I'm doing. And so I need to submit to that process that God has to really get the God outcome. And there was another thing that I thought about, if I could just add this thing, it was like almost screaming at me while we were talking. One thing that because sometimes you don't feel like sometimes everything is coming. We talked about the testing, the trials, you know, not every day was a great day. So I wasn't like every day I was like, "Ooh, I'm glad I'm at a campground with, you know, four other people not getting paid and having to, you know, clean toilets." You know, that wasn't it. But this thing that I learned from David was that I learned how to encourage myself. You know, because there are going to be times when there are going to be people that you're not going to be able to get that person on the call. You're not going to be able to get that, you know, that you're going to listen to that podcast or that whatever. And you're like, man, this just ain't doing it. So how do you learn how to encourage yourself? And that was one thing that I think early on in my walk with the Lord, that in moments, I would say these two things. If I didn't feel willing, I would always lean back on God, I'm grateful that you're using me, that you brought me to this place. And Lord, help my unbelief. Because sometimes your willingness is also connected to what you believe, right? So if I don't believe a certain thing, my actions are gonna kind of line up with what I'm actually believing. So many times I would have to tap into, you know, what am I actually believing in this moment that is stopping me from moving forward? Do I believe God's gonna fail me? Do I believe that God's not good? Do I believe this? So I gotta go back to my belief kind of system and check it out. And then the next thing is that idea of I got to encourage myself. I have to get into a place where that's praying in the spirit, where that is, you know, reading or studying something that really build up my faith again, and really just get into that place of that being encouraged. So I think those two things are really, even to this day, I mean, I lead a church, I lead campuses, I, you know, go all over the world, you know, I'm a father first, I'm a husband, you know, all those things, you know, they pull on you, and you have to find those spaces. Vulnerable moment, before I came on this podcast earlier today, I went to go get my feet done. Don't judge me. But as I was, and I just,
you got a
pedicure. Yeah. Cause my feet, I got some dogs. No, judge, so I had no to, judgment. I got to take care of them dogs. But here's the point is like, there are moments where you have to know is you got to encourage yourself. So I'm driving there, you know, I'm listening to Rogan. I'm listening to different people as I'm getting to the, and all of a sudden I know the Spirit of the Lord is like, you need to take time to build yourself up. So even before I went in 10 minutes, just took that time to say, God, I love you. God, I'm grateful. God, thank you for what you've done in my life. You know, because I poured out over these last 2 weeks, and I'm just saying, God, I'm just giving all the praise back to you. And I'm telling you, something happened in that moment. There was a transaction where I laid something down, I took on something, and I truly felt strengthened from that moment. So that's things that I do in my own life. So if I'm speaking to leaders now, I would say that definitely you got to have take moments of gratitude. Write down. Sometimes we're I can do it because I've been doing it for years. But if you don't really have a, David had a, yeah, that was it. That was what I wanted to say. David had a system, had a built-in system of encouragement. David encouraged himself. And I tell our church, we have a built-in system of encouragement. How do you build it into your culture to be an encourager? How do you build it into your leadership to be an encouragement to yourself and to the people that are around you? How do you do that? Because I believe you can build that system of encouragement. You can build the technology of encouragement to run through your leadership, run through your life. You're going to see that there are people that are built up around you and people that are desiring to listen and to be taught and also that are grateful that they're there.
That's amazing. I love that. I hear, like, in this episode here, like, a few things. And then I'm going to ask you to kind of give us a real practical activation of what we can do.
Yeah.
I know you kind of generally did a little bit of that, but just give a real, like, maybe a timeline and a practical activation. But I hear kind of four things. I hear this theme of, like, what it takes to go from a prison to, like, the palace. This is the Joseph story, right? You go from you, and you literally did that. You even referenced Ecclesiastes chapter 4 about going from the prison as a youth to kingship, right? Which is really the Joseph story. I hear four keys to this reality of, which really is the graduation and the process is discipleship. And I hear four things. I hear number one, you need to find your environment, the right environment. And number two, you need to really have an attitude that's full of gratitude from where you came from so that you can celebrate the present and pull on, like Joseph did while he was in prison. God was with him. He was able to be promoted. He was able to find favor even when he was in prison. And then, you know, so it's gratitude. It's having an attitude of gratitude. Like, I'm sure Joseph at one point was like, hey, prison's better than the pit that I was in just years prior. You know, maybe it wasn't as good as the palace, but now I'm going to have an attitude that says, hey, I'm going to thrive while I'm in this dysfunctional place.
Yeah.
Because he was falsely accused. And then, you know, this third thing of, you know, we have environment, we have an attitude of gratitude. This third thing of being willing to be obedient, whatever the cost is. And number four, like you just kind of mentioned it, learning how to encourage yourself. I think these four elements or four truths are so key to our ability to grow, be discipled, to move through suffering, to endure. All these things I think are so important. So You know, in light of that, what would you say to the leaders that are listening, whether they're in business, whether they're family, you know, maybe they're in entertainment in some way, the educational system, the list goes on. What would you say for them if they're going to grow and be discipled and really make impact in their sphere? Can you give us like a practical activation to do?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I was thinking about that really has helped me over the years, and this is, I don't actually say this one a lot, but I love it, is that I'm under the impression that even if you're a believer, you still need your soul to be evangelized, because many times your soul could be, you know, and so it's still carnal. And so so the idea of discipleship, I also believe that you need to disciple your soul. That's why we read the word, etc. So one thing, especially from what we're saying right now, that you can do, and I've done this activation many times with our leadership. And it's the idea of, and it's going to sound a little odd, but follow me out, thank God until it hurts.
Wow.
So I think that many times we can give thanks, you know, in churches and stuff like that. We say, hey, just say one thing that you're grateful for. And we're easy. We can think of one thing at least that we're grateful for. Yeah. But the idea of thanking God until you hit that place where you're like, it feels like there's a restriction. You'll feel it in your heart. You'll feel like, oh man, like it. And that is the place that God is after, where you can push past that place and still be grateful. And we've done this activation. I did this activation actually when I used to live in Germany. We didn't get to talk about that, but I used to live in Germany. I pastored a church there, and the church was really going through a very hard time. The leader there was very narcissistic. There was a lot of things going. So what I did was, during our prayer time, instead of just doing a prayer, I would bring and these were the leaders of that community. I said, let us thank God until, and actually I didn't have this concept yet. I just was like, hey, let's just give God thanks, because there was so much complaining. I was like, we got to break through this. And so we start to thank God. And then all of a sudden I felt the restriction in the room. I said, well, let's thank God until it hurts. And then all of a sudden people in the room started to cry. Wow. They started to weep. They started to, there was something that began to happen supernaturally. And I can see that there was a turnaround in our leadership, where people were less complaining and more grateful for the opportunity that they have to lead the people that were there. And it was a powerful moment. So I would say, if anyone is watching this, take time and just start to thank God for everything you can think of, until you get to that place where you're like, oh man, maybe this is too much, but remember, he's worthy of it all. So just keep going past that place, and I believe that you'll find there'll be a change in your disposition, and also in your attitude.
I love that, man. That's awesome. That's a powerful, powerful, powerful truth. You know, we enter his gates with thanksgiving. Like, we need access to things that are beyond the gates.
And think about this, Sean. You work out, right? So think about this. Like, when does real muscle growth happen? It happens in the strain. Oh, yeah. Again, thumbs up. When it happens when there's a strain. It helps. Even if whether you lift five times or five reps, or you lift 20 reps, if you're not putting the strain on the muscle, especially on that last rep, you're really not going to get the full muscle growth that's intended. So it's the same way. That's why I say, thank God until you feel that restriction. And now you're really pressing it. Now you're really getting that growth.
100%. And I think that's such a key to discipleship, right? Because discipleship is hard. You're going to be challenged. You're going to be stretched, especially if you're being discipled by an individual, not just like, you know, watching videos and, you know, personally by yourself with the Lord. Like, it's all great, but we need people in our life.
All great
leadership in our life. You're going to be challenged. You're going to be offended, like you were when that woman didn't necessarily, you know, jump, skip and hop when you said you want to lead a trip to Jamaica with some people. Like, you know, like you're going to leave, and you're going to choose to be bitter or get better.
That's right.
And a lot of people choose bitterness over betterness, you know. Like, so I think this is so key. I want to thank you so much. And I know this is an encouragement to so many people listening, and I want to hear if this has impacted you in any way. Please let us know. And thank you so much, Doctor. I feel bad. I feel like I've been saying your name wrong the whole time. I've been calling you Malik, and it's Malik.
You know, Georgian Banov, he calls me Malik. From like the Middle East or both, you know, East Europeans, they call me Malik. It's
okay. What about Canada? Do people call you Malik from Canada too?
I don't know.
But thank you so much, Dr. Malik. We love you, man. It's so good to have you on here, and looking forward to connecting more. Looking forward to having you again. And once again, we're going to put all the in the description below, all the ways that you can connect with Dr. Malik Edwards. We want to connect with him, connect with what he's doing, follow him on social media, get connected to his ministry and the things that he does and his travel itinerary as well, because maybe you're in the area. You can join in on one of the meetings that he's going to be
Sounds
speaking
great.
At conferences, events. So thank you so much once again. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Supernatural Leadership Podcast. My name is Sean Gaby. Everyone has a leader within, so we are making that leader a little more supernatural. Until next time, we will see you soon.
If this podcast has been an investment into your life and or impacted you in any way, we are incredibly thankful. We would love for you to join us in being able to continue bringing leadership content like this every month. Of course, it does not come without a cost, and our heart is to continue bringing you more improved quality and content. If you would like to partner with us with a one-time financial gift or to sign up as a monthly partner, you can do so at kingdomculture.ca. Thank you for listening to the Supernatural Leadership Podcast.